In this episode, recorded during the 15th Parlamerica's Plenary Assembly on Promoting Inclusive Societies for Sustainable Development, Dr. Elena Gaspard, Director of Governance and Institutions of the Institute of Fiscal Studies and Democracy, moderates a discussion with experts from the parliaments of Trinidad and Tobago, Canada, and the Canadian province of British Columbia on their respective legislatures' experience and providing opportunities for public participation prior to and during the budget deliberations.
So with us today, we have the pleasure of hearing from Ms. Olivier, who is joining us as the Parliamentary Secretary of Ministry of Energy and Energy Industries from Trinidad and Tobago. I'm a chemist by training. Ms. Olivier has vast experience in the energy sector, of course, in risk management and in resource development and in resource management, studied at the University of the West Indies, and has worked for various natural resource corporations in Trinidad and Tobago. Next to her, we have our veteran MP, the Honorable Wayne Easter, who's been elected 8 times and who is currently our House Finance Committee Chair. apart from being the current chair, he's served in a number of positions, both in government as a member of the opposition and now as a member of the governing party, or as an MP of the governing party. So we look forward to your perspective there. As he mentioned, he's a longtime member of the U.S.-Canada Interparliamentary Group, and he's now the co-chair of that group. So needless to say, for Canada, this is certainly an important time to have as many of our parliamentarians and as many of our, you know, members of government and members of the state apparatus working together on a number of important issues. And we also will hear from Kate Ryan Lloyd, who is the deputy clerk and clerk of committees of the Legislative Assembly of British Columbia. She has vast experience, actually, serving the legislative branch. She's done everything from working in the library to serving as committee clerk. And she's also active in a lot of professional associations associated with Parliament. She's the executive director of the Canadian Council of Public Accounts, is on the editorial board of the Canadian Parliamentary Review, and has served as president of a number of other organizations and contributes research and writing to a lot of thinking surrounding parliamentary procedure and similar topics. So with that, we welcome our panelists. And we'll turn it over to you, Ms. Olivier, to begin our conversation today.
Yep. Thank you very much. Good afternoon to all. And first, I must thank Parlamericas for giving Trinidad and Tobago this opportunity to share with us on our experience and the steps we are taking to sort of increase citizen participation in our national budget cycle. I feel like the baby among the group with all the years of experience that I have as parliamentarians on the table. This is my first term in politics, having been elected in 2015. I certainly look forward to joining the ranks of the 12-year serving members that we have among us. Now, citizen participation in our national budget. Global standards recognize the legislator's role in budget approval and call for in-year parliamentary oversight of budget execution, as well as effective parliamentary audit procedures. Moreover, there is increased recognition that parliamentary involvement should be continuous, covering all stages of the budget process, including medium-term budgeting and priority setting. The role of parliaments in the national budget process. Parliaments the world over exist to ensure transparency and accountability in service delivery. Through their core functions of lawmaking and oversight, parliaments hold the government to account on behalf of the people, ensuring that government policies and actions are both efficient and commensurate with the needs of the public. It's a well-accepted democratic principle that no money can be spent without a prior approval of the legislator. So Parliament's role is therefore critical in checking excesses on the part of officials that have the mandate to disburse state resources. In fulfilling this role, the legislative branch performs a variety of functions throughout the financial cycle. Now, in Trinidad and Tobago, our fiscal year commences on the 1st of October, and our budget cycle begins in February to March, with the Minister of Finance issuing a request in the form of a call circular to all ministries and departments for the submission of their draft estimates of revenue and expenditure. In producing these estimates, the ministries and departments would engage in their own consultations with a relevant representative of the stakeholder groups to ensure that the needs of citizens are met. For major developmental projects, cabinet approval must be obtained before they can be included in the agency's estimates. And the deadline for submission of all draft estimates of revenue and expenditure is the 30th of April. So in preparing the estimates, many of the ministries, depending on the nature of the ministries, they would engage in consultation with their various stakeholder groups to determine what are the particular areas in which their constituencies would require particular expenditure. And during the ensuing period from May to mid-September, the Ministry of Finance and the Ministry of Planning and Development would examine, analyze, and hold discussions with the various ministries and departments to seek justification for the expenditure and make the adjustments as necessary. The role of the Ministry of Planning is critical here because the Ministry of Planning would have that oversight view for what the national priorities are. And together with the Ministry of Finance, then they would aid in prioritizing expenditure. Remember the comment made from one of my colleagues, one of our colleagues, who indicated that the national budget is really a list of priority spending. And in a lot of ways, that's what it is, because there is limited resources, and you have to decide what you're going to spend those resources on. Following the finalization of the document, well, then the Minister of Finance would seek Cabinet's approval of the finalized draft estimates of revenue and expenditure. And once approved, these documents, along with the appropriation bill, will be presented to Parliament for consideration and approval. One of the new measures my government undertook last year in 2017 was to hold a pre-budget, I can call it consultation, but it was really a presentation on the state of the economy. And we did this as a form of managing expectations, because there were some harsh measures that we intended to introduce last year, one of them being a removal of a portion of the subsidy on fuel prices, recognizing that this would lead to an increase in automobile fuel prices, so that the public wouldn't be surprised when it came. And we held a large consultation, which was televised and shown on social media, so everyone would understand the current state of the country's finances, being a largely oil and gas-based economy and with the lower gas prices that occurred prior to 2017. We needed the population to understand that many of the social programs that they had grown accustomed to would have to be cut. And we felt that this session and to explain the country's situation would have gone a long way in mitigating the negative fallout when the budget was read. Once the document is presented to Parliament on Budget Day, the Minister of Finance would present the appropriation bill along with the draft estimates and the other budget-related documents. These would include a public sector investment program document, social sector investment program, and a review of the economy. These documents would also be uploaded online to the Ministry of Finance webpage, and a limited number of print copies would also be made available to members of the public. And I think this is an important way of disseminating information to the citizenry. So at the close of the budget speech, the Minister of Finance would announce the date for the resumption of the debate, which would be no less than 3 clear days from the date that the budget is read. And this also provides time for full examination of the documents by members of the opposition as well as independent members. And when the debate resumes, it starts with a response from the Leader of the Opposition, who is given an equivalent speaking time to the Minister of Finance, so that there can be no appearance of favoritism in terms of presenting arguments. The debate would continue for no more than an additional 4 days. And following the debate, we have the commencement of the Standing Finance Committee. So at the laying of the budget, all the documents would be referred to the Standing Finance Committee. And following the 5-day debating period, Standing Finance Committee commences. Now, our Standing Finance Committee is a committee of the whole House. It is one important mechanism of ex-ante budgetary scrutiny, which is mandated under our standing orders of the House of Representatives. It considers the estimates and the appropriation bill, and it considers and reports on all proposals for expenditure of public revenues. So it isn't only invoked at the reading of the annual budget, but if there are any supplementary appropriations throughout the year, it also have to pass through the sitting of the Standing Finance Committee. This committee is a forum where an in-depth analysis of the budget is conducted. The committee has 5 clear days to examine the heads of revenue and expenditure. Originally, this committee was chaired by the Minister of Finance, and the meetings were held in camera, which made it less effective. And it was really a non-efficient form. The Minister of Finance would have read the budget, and if he chairs the Standing Finance Committee, it was basically just a rubber stamp. So we made some changes in 2014, where we changed the chair. So the chair of the committee is now the Speaker of the House, so we have an impartial person chairing the committee. And the order for examination of the heads of expenditure is now being determined by the opposition. And also, we moved the meeting so that they are held in public. So now you have a genuine session where the opposition can determine which ministries and departments' expenditure is being examined, determine the order in which they are being examined, and they are allowed to ask questions on anything that appears in any of the documents. So prior to the beginning of the Standing Finance Committee, the leader of the opposition would notify the House of the order for examination of heads. The schedule would be made, and the House, the Parliament, would be responsible for ensuring that the relevant minister for the particular ministry is present, and the senior technocrats of that ministry are also present for those questions. And every question that is asked, if the minister is unable to respond at the time, the minister would then take an undertaking to respond in writing at a later date, and Parliament ensures that that undertaking is upheld. And these sittings are held. They are televised live, and they also appear on the Parliament's YouTube channel for persons who are not in front of television. And very often you may find persons from the public, well, they may contact a member of the opposition or another member and probably feed questions to them, which can then be asked within the Standing Finance Committee. So following the examination by the Standing Finance Committee, the bill is returned to the House, it's approved and passed to the Senate for debate, where you go through the 5-day debate. Once the parliamentary approval is obtained, the appropriation bill is forwarded to the President of the Republic for assent, after which it becomes the Appropriation Act for the particular year. And it is now the responsibility of the executive branch to implement the measures, and the remaining responsibility of the legislature to continue to hold the executive branch accountable for its action or inaction. So our parliament, therefore, has a role in monitoring the implementation of the budget, which it does through a number of joint select committees. In 2014, we established a Public Administration and Appropriations Committee. This committee is responsible for reporting to the House on the budget expenditure of government agencies as it occurs, as well as on the administration of these agencies. This is to ensure that funds are used for the approved purpose and to enable the detection of any challenges during implementation. It also allows for making recommendations at an early stage during the implementation cycle. Now, the work of the PAAC is therefore critical to Parliament's financial scrutiny process, but it happens during the implementation year. This committee is chaired by the Speaker, and it determines its own work program and focuses its inquiries on current issues relating to expenditure and administration. One of the tools that the PAAC uses, again, it conducts public hearings, which are broadcast live, and viewers can also submit questions over the social media, which can be posed to the agency being examined. It gives real-time feedback to the public. So in the event that there is a topical issue concerning expenditure being undertaken by a particular ministry, the PAAC can make a determination that this is a topic that we think the public would want further information on, and we can summon the accounting officer and the technocrats of that ministry. We typically do not summon the ministers in particular. We don't involve the politicians in this process, just the members, the public servants working in the ministry. And we'd ask direct questions related to their appropriation of funds or their lack of action in particular incidents. And some of our hearings have gotten great public interest. So depending on, so if there's a topic that the public, that is in the public domain that is getting a lot of attention, you know, we may decide to conduct an inquiry, and we find that these particular ones, we tend to have lots of questions being submitted via the social media platforms, which the parliamentary staff would pass to the members during the examination. And we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from the public. In some hearings, the viewership of the parliament channel on that day tends to be quite high. For post-implementation oversight, we have the Public Accounts Committee, and we have an additional one called the Public Accounts Enterprises Committee, which does the same thing as the Public Accounts Committee, but looks specifically at state enterprises. These would be entities that are controlled by the government, but are not necessarily government ministries. So the role of these two committees, the PAC and the PAEC, is to ascertain whether monies appropriated were utilized in accordance with the purpose for which they were approved by Parliament. So whereas the public administration whereas the PAAC would have looked at implementation during the year, the PAC and the PAEC, these would review the audited financial statements. So these really look at what happened at the end of the fiscal term. So these committees in particular pay very close attention to the comments made by the Auditor General, which relate to financial management. Unlike the PAAC, which is chaired by the Speaker, the PAC and the PAEC are both chaired by members of the opposition, again with the intention of really striving to hold the executive to account. So there's no sense that the committees are really a rubber stamp, because the opposition leads these committees and they really do a detailed examination of the work of the ministries and the state enterprises to ensure that their financial management practices are in accordance with what is required of state entities. Our committees meet frequently. Most committees during the session would hold 2 meetings per month. Some may meet more frequently than that, and they would call in permanent secretaries, heads of government departments, accounting officers, and boards of an executive of state agencies. And they would seek explanations for any shortcomings that are highlighted in audit reports. These committees also conduct public hearings, which often gain a lot of viewership, depending on the particular entity and any scandals that may be in the media at the time of the inquiry. So in conclusion, I'd like to say that parliamentary scrutiny is a critical function that aids in the fight against corruption. Our parliamentary committees, such as the Standing Finance Committee, the PAAC, the PAC, and the PAEC, are a vital component in the scrutiny of the executive. The effectiveness of these committees is dependent not only on the features of the committee in terms of their structure and the entities that are appointed to chair them, but also on the political, economic, social, and cultural context of the society in which they operate. Accountability is derived from the premise that those entrusted with delegated duties must be required to account for their actions throughout the budget cycle, and to some extent, you can have all the systems in place, but you are unable to mitigate what determined human beings would do on their own. But we believe that we have come some way in increasing transparency and citizen participation in the budget process through our financial security committees. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Olivier, for your presentation, I think some interesting pieces that came out were certainly the idea of your pre-budget consultations on the state of the economy, and almost the way it seems like you used that as an opportunity for public education and also buy-in. So I hope we can come back to that in the questions. And then also this idea that you sit as a committee of the whole. I mean, I'm sure That would be a very interesting, I think something similarly is done with appropriations in BC, if I'm not mistaken. That I think is just fascinating as an idea. So thank you very much for sharing that. And Mr. Easter, over to you.
All right, there we go. We have a number of slides that I'll go through. They will be on, I think, on the on your site following this. Some of them I'll just skip over, because what we wanted to do is basically outline the process that we follow through on the member side of Parliament. The budget process itself in Parliament, when the budget's tabled by the minister, is similar to what Nicole has said happens in Trinidad and Tobago, except in our case we keep the speaker a little further distance from some of those committees than obviously in Trinidad and Tobago. So what I'll talk about is basically the pre-budget process we follow in Canada, and it's designed to try and give as much public input as possible to the public, not only on the specifics of each finance line kind of thing, but some of the policies that may need to be removed, some of the policies that may need to be brought forward from the public's or the organization's perspective. So the first slide there, basically, there is a standing order of the House of Commons that authorizes the Standing Committee on Finance to consider and make reports on proposals regarding budgetary policy of the federal government. And this is different from all other committees in that the pre-budget consultations hearings are really mandated by legislation that a committee of Parliament, the Finance Committee, must hold pre-budget consultations with the public and report to the House of Commons in December. Following that, just to come back to some of the things Nicole was talking about, the budget in Canada is usually tabled in March or April, so these thoughts are considered. The Minister of Finance also holds some private hearings on his own as well. But the budget is tabled in March or April, so this committee is to report in time so that the Minister of Finance has that feedback with recommendations for the budget that he or she will be pursuing. So really, in effect, there's a very intensive 3 months period starting as soon as Parliament resumes in March. Submissions come in over the summer. We set a deadline for submissions by mid-August. This year we've had 524, I think, submissions. Then we'll set up the hearing process. And it's a fairly intensive 3 months work for the Finance Committee in the fall. So turning to the next slide, just the makeup of committee, in case that's of interest to people. Finance Committee has members of the main political parties in the House of Commons. There's really five members from the Liberal Party plus the chair, three from the Conservative Party and one from the New Democratic Party right now. Those numbers change depending on the makeup of each parliament. So the committee is also supported, as it states in the slide, by two clerks, up to five analysts, logistics officers, and numerous interpreters and translators. We identify as a committee, we sit down government members and opposition members, and I think you will find that at least the current Finance Committee, and I think fairly historically, the Finance Committee has tried to be fairly nonpartisan, to try and just deal with the issues and as much as we can stay away from the partisan politics. We usually identify a theme in late May, and usually the theme is nationally important. It might be economic growth, it might be productivity, it might be competitiveness, but we'll try and identify a theme, and it's our hope that when we put out the release in June for the public to make submissions, they will stick relatively close to the theme. Of course, that very seldom really happens. But the intent is there. People have their own issues and they want to present them, and it's their right to do so, but we try and stick to a theme so that we can work out policy around this theme. So a news release goes out early in June, and if known, the locations and dates of public hearings, and we will hold hearings in Ottawa and throughout Canada in the last half of September and throughout the month of October. So this year, in the next 2 weeks, we'll be holding extensive hearings in Ottawa, and then we will be going 5 eastern cities in the first week of October, and 4 western cities on the third week of October. In fact, one of the hearings will be in Victoria here. From that, we prepare a report during the first 3 weeks of November. It, of course, has to be translated and distributed to members. We consider that as a full committee. We consider that report the last week of November, first week of December, if required, examine the witness testimony, and we work together based on really motions at committee and make recommendations to the government, particularly the Minister of Finance, and then that committee is presented in the House the first week of December. The Library of Parliament analysts do a good job of really what they pull together. This year we've had 524 submissions that have come in. There will be the witnesses at committee. Most of them will have submitted a brief. The analysts will go through each of those reports, draw out the key points for members, and we'll go from there. The next slides I will slip over fairly quickly. Why we wanted to put these in is to kind of explain to you, I think our process now is fairly good. It's had some ups and downs, had some setbacks. We have did things wrong as well in the past, and probably will do some in the future as well. But this is the process that we followed to get to where we were today. Really started in 1994, and both Bob and I were members of that government, where the then finance minister wanted to involve the public more in the budget making process. It was mainly on tax issues, the new economy, and productivity. Looking back on it as compared to what we do today, the Finance Committee at the time basically stuck to business issues. None of the more social issues that we will hear about at our committee hearings today. And that certainly limited the committee report to a fairly narrow focus. In 2002, it was kind of a more of a turning point. The then chair of the Finance Committee looked at the Senate results and what are the broad issues that maybe government should be looking at in its budget. The budget relates to all matters, whether it's your social policy, your economic policy, your pensions, whatever. So it broadened itself to more people, businesses, and communities, and tried to, and established a more inclusive model of getting information and witnesses and presentations to committee. It, of course, led to hundreds of requests to appear. In that year, I'm told, and I wasn't on the committee then, but all of which were accommodated, and I think the committee that year had some 800 witnesses, which is really, we had 300 last year, and if you asked me at the end of the day who was the first witness this morning, I couldn't tell you. but it's all on the record. And so it became a little overburdensome. So they tried new things between 2003-2010, deadline for witnesses for request to appear, limit on the number of pages, and in fact today, of that 524, I think I've now got 325 read. We asked them, and most are following this procedure, first page is your recommendations, and then a brief of no more than 2,000 words, or we're going to send it back to you. And witnesses and organizations are sticking to that process pretty well. So we've tightened things up over time. On the next one, we will skip that slide because we, I will say, if we're not already by it to June, the request for estimated federal fiscal cost of proposals. Look, we've had people suggest that. That is impossible for an ordinary for a citizen to do. I mean, it's just impossible. It's a good idea, but how do you make it work? So that was that kind of idea was turfed. Although some will come in and tell us exactly how much money they think we should be spending. Nothing wrong with that. We in 2011 we've moved to I guess more openness. All briefs are available on the Finance Committee website, and not everybody certainly goes to the website, but it is interesting. One thing I really find that's interesting about the Finance Committee is there usually is a lot of new ideas out there, a lot of really, really good proposals. Government can't afford to do everything that's asked of them, that's for sure. I mean, you had to be fiscally responsible. But all briefs are available on the committee's website, and that's common for all the Finance Committee's study now. We try to pretty strictly limit the number of witnesses invited to make a presentation, and we try to balance that on our committee with government and opposition witnesses. We're not We really try not to get into this proportional analogy too much. If they're a good witness, whether they're opposed to what the government's doing or whether they agree with what the government's doing, I think it's useful to hear them, and we try and balance that up. And as we say in this slide, we do try to have people focus on themes. The next slide we will skip. It basically just mentions that we try to have these briefs online so that people the public can view those briefs as well as they want, rather than just members. We'll skip the next slide as well in the interest of time. On this slide, the idea of a two-stream process is we have submissions. And not everybody who submits gets to be a witness and explain their point. And we also have some witnesses who haven't managed to present a submission for some reason or other. But that's the two streams that we try and follow to involve the public. In recent years, we've continued that two-stream approach. We identified themes, as I've mentioned. We do the broad cross-country hearings, and we've tended to in the last budget year, and we will be this year again, doing a couple of visits to the U.S. To see what is happening there. In fact, this year we're looking at competitiveness, and one of the things we have to recognize in Canada, the tax changes in the United States could be impacting our competitiveness in Canada, so we're going to make two stops in the U.S. to look at what is happening, what's happening there. The next slide, we try and make sure that the witnesses represent a wide variety of groups across the country in the different regions, different demographic groups. There's a gender focus in that some of the briefs and witnesses highlight the priorities of women, and in fact, One of the mandates of this government is that a federal budget must undergo a gender-based analysis, and I think that's important. The 2017 highlights the processes occurred from 19th of September till early December. As I said, we had 300 witnesses. I might mention that the open mic sessions are, in case people don't know what they mean, there's the formal session, formal committee that's all recorded and the witness and so on and so forth, typical parliamentary hearing. But there's always some who don't get on the list and they have a point to make. So we take a little time when we're on the road, for instance in Victoria here, where hopefully we can keep it down to a half an hour, where we give the public the opportunity to get up and make a one-minute statement. Sometimes we'll stretch that to two if there's not many of them. But to make a one-minute statement on an issue that's important to them, it is on the record. Members here, there's no questioning by committee members. It's just for them to put a statement on the record, whereas a regular witness, your members have the opportunity to raise questions to them. The last 2 years at committee hearings, Engineers Without Borders, they had some young students at every city stop we made. Their whole point was to increase international development spending. And in fact, the Minister of Finance did increase that. It's timed over a number of years in this year's budget. Last year's budget present, report had some 92 recommendations in it. I'll just go through three quick examples here. On individuals, their presentation highlighted areas: health, security and well-being, education, skills and employment, and underrepresented groups, including seniors, indigenous people, women, and individuals with disabilities. On the business side, the highlights were taxation and regulatory requirements, trade and business supports, employment measures and contributions, and sector and business specific proposals. And on the government side, and this came up earlier, economic and fiscal policy, how do you balance the books, environmental, scientific and social policy, and infrastructure and transportation. So this year to date, as I said, our theme is ensuring Canada's competitiveness. We're in the process now of identifying witnesses, prioritizing who will have the opportunity to present, and we will also be making two stops, as I said, in the United States. What's worked over time, there has been a high number of briefs submitted. They're all across the board, so they do appear to be engaged, and I think the people, there's an expectation now that this has been done over basically 20 years. There's an expectation that we had, that if you're an organization, we had to have a submission in by mid-August and make our points to the government in that way, and I think that's a good thing. And a very, very broad range of issues and from regions and demographic sectors. Problems we've had in the past is too long a briefs, that has many components basically presenting the same brief at several locations. We try and eliminate that now. And sometimes in the past, way too many requests for witnesses, but we boiled that down, I think, pretty good over the number of years. And I think the other important point is that anybody can make a can submit a submission, and it is on the website, available to committee and available to the public. Second last slide, I think on the lessons learned, it is important to identify themes that truly matter to people, businesses, and communities, so that people can engage around that topic. And as I said, they certainly don't always stick to the theme, but it's important to try and to bring focus to the committee hearings. And we try and select a theme that will allow individuals and organizations to identify with it. It's certainly important to hear from as many interested individuals and organizations as possible, be as inclusive as possible, and include the diversity of views expressed. Nothing wrong with people being in opposition to a point. I think that's how you get to a better point at the end of the day. And we'll leave it at that, Madam Chair, and questions later. I didn't, as I said in the beginning, I didn't touch on the parliamentary process itself. That's another process that certainly the Finances Committee is involved in. And we hold hearings on the budget when it's tabled. But this is how we try as parliamentarians with all parties to get as much public input from the public as we can in terms of what they believe should be included in the next budget.
Thank you very much, Mr. Easter. What I'm hoping we can come back to during the conversation as well is for those countries that don't have public participation models yet, what actually compelled action in Canada? I mean, I have my own suspicions given it was roughly 1994, but I'd be curious to know if there are lessons there for other jurisdictions. Thank you. And so now we have Ms. Ryan Lloyd from BC. I think so.
Great. Thank you very much, and thank you to my colleagues here at the table for interesting and comparative examples. As you know, I'm the Deputy Clerk at the Legislative Assembly of British Columbia, and to begin, I wanted to thank the organizers for the opportunity to be here and to contribute towards these discussions today. As was mentioned earlier by Ms. Malcolmson, most of the members of the Legislative Assembly of BC this week are at an annual conference, a provincial municipal conference, and because of the nature of that important event each year, I know our chair of the Finance Committee, Bob Deeth, a member for Maple Ridge, wanted me to extend his greetings to all of you, and on his behalf and on behalf of the other members of the committee, it's my pleasure to be here today. In order to give you a bit of an overview of the work of the Finance Committee in British Columbia, I'll start by noting that it's a process that has been established here in the province now for 18 years. We undertook our first public budget consultation process in the year 2000. So my intent this afternoon is to give you an overview of its evolution over that period of time, highlight some of the key elements of the committee's process, identify some challenges and opportunities, and engage in a discussion with you all with regards to your own respective processes and interests in these areas. In British Columbia, an all-party committee, currently comprised of 9 members, undertakes budget consultation on an annual basis each fall. You may know that in May 2017, we had a general election in British Columbia, which produced very close election results. As a result, we have a minority government here in British Columbia at the present time. So the 9 members currently on the Finance Committee include 4 members of the governing BC NDP party, 4 of the official opposition, the BC Liberal Party, and 1 BC Green Party member, for a total of 9 members, for a relatively small committee compared to the numbers that we had in the past, sometimes 10 or 12 members of our 87-member House would participate in the committee's work. Currently, it is 9 members. This particular committee, like other standing committees, receives the terms of reference from the Legislative Assembly, so by way of a sessional motion, it is appointed each parliamentary session. But in addition, the statutory provisions of the Budget Transparency and Accountability Act outline the basic framework for its annual work on the budget consultation process. The Budget Transparency and Accountability Act, the statute that guides the committee's work, also includes some key provisions with respect to relatively tight timelines which come into play each fall. The Act advises that the committee must receive by or before September 15th a budget consultation paper which will guide the consultation work of the committee each year. That paper is published in English and typically translated into Korean, Punjabi, French, simplified, and traditional Chinese in order to reach a broad and diverse democratic population as possible in our province. If you have an interest in viewing the budget consultation paper, it's a usually fairly brief document. I do have some copies available here at the table. But once we have received on behalf of the committee a copy of the budget consultation paper, that is the marker that in fact opens up the committee's consultation period. It's characterized typically by 4 weeks of consultations with British Columbians, followed by 4 weeks of deliberations. So just as Mr. Easter was describing, a fairly tight and intensive timeline, federally, of course, and they're covering the entire country. Here with our provincial focus, we also try to expedite things as much as we can to meet the statutory timelines of a 2 month in total process from the launch of the paper, the opening of registration, the receipt of submissions, and supporting committee deliberations. The budget consultation paper is, in essence, a government publication prepared by staff within the Ministry of Finance. It is typically released just before the September 15th deadline, and it is typically released in conjunction with the province's first quarterly update. So it will be presented in the context of a fiscal update, and it will also identify a number of fiscal themes and priorities for the coming year. The paper usually includes 4 to 6 questions that help shape the committee's dialogue with British Columbians. These particular questions also form the basis of an online survey that is hosted on the committee's website, outlining opportunities for British Columbians to submit specific responses to those questions in the paper. The committee will often receive hundreds, if not thousands, of submissions from every region of the province, and they work hard to ensure that the process is accessible by all communities. Large and small communities are particularly invited to be part of the process, as well as urban and rural ones. The budget consultation process provides a vital link between the work of the Legislative Assembly and the many diverse regions and populations of the province. Public participation has generally been successful, and there's a number of means by which the public can participate. To give a quick overview of our 4 week consultation process, this typically includes public hearings. This year, in 2018, beginning next Monday, the committee will begin its consultation tour of the province, visiting 14 communities. We've had different approaches each year. It's often shaped by the practicalities of the parliamentary calendar as well. The legislature will be in session on Monday, October the 1st, and the committee will not travel while the House is in session. So we have an expedited travel schedule beginning next Monday, September 17th. Just last Friday, September 7th, our online consultation portal opened up, and that provides an opportunity for British Columbians who want to pre-register to speak with the committee on a first-come, first-served basis. An opportunity is available to all individuals and organizations at the same time on a first-come, first-served basis on the online consultation portal. As of Friday morning, 425 individual time slots for presentations were made open, and to date, 222 are now full with individuals and organizations. And we have, of the 14 communities that have been identified for regional public hearing, we have 4 that are now completely full. It mirrors the same type of demand. Each year, it seems, those larger population centers fill up very, very quickly. So the public hearings in Vancouver Surrey and Mission, all in the Lower Mainland area, are now full, as well as the one in the Greater Victoria area being held this year at the Esquimalt Songhees Cultural Centre. But for those other communities that still have spots remaining and available to the public, we also provide an opportunity for Skype and teleconference connections. So in the event that we still have an open time slot while the committee is, for example, meeting perhaps in Kamloops or in Dawson Creek, members of the public will still be able to register for the opportunity, perhaps not to make a face-to-face presentation for the committee, but an opportunity to provide a verbal 10-minute presentation, including some opportunity for questions and discussion with committee members. We always emphasize as well that all means of communication, all means of submission and participation in the committee's work are given equal weight. So although there can be a heavy demand at times to have a face-to-face opportunity to present at a public hearing, the committee will also give equal consideration to input received in its other formats. So the next item of submissions that are typically received are those written submissions that can also be provided online through the committee's portal, as well as we receive many hundreds through email, regular mail, and the occasional fax still. The submissions, typically the written submissions, are often more detailed in nature and are submitted on behalf of large provincial organizations or regional organizations. We typically receive between 300 and 400 of those each year. In addition, we have the online survey responses to the questions that had been laid out in the budget consultation paper. We usually receive the highest volume of submissions responses to the online survey. Our record number was 4,660 a number of years ago. Last year, I think it was more in the range of 700 responses. In addition, the final method of communicating with the committee include video and audio submissions. We try to make the process as open and accessible to all kinds of input. So although we only receive a small handful of video or audio submissions, they're often amongst the most creative. I recall a time when we had a music teacher concerned about arts funding play the piano and sing his submission to the committee. It may have been the most memorable one we received that year. While undertaking the public hearing travel, committee members will also carry out selected site visits to learn more about the communities in the province that they visit, including the industries and the natural resource sector, jobs that support British Columbia's regional economies. In past years, the committee held site visits to an oil and gas refinery, a greenhouse, a fish hatchery. This year, they will be visiting a zinc and lead smelting facility, a logging operation, and observing an Indigenous language class on Haida Gwaii. With respect to the role of the executive branch, I've assembled a few comments to highlight the work of the executive branch and the legislative branch as it relates to the budget consultation process in particular. Of course, the budget consultation process is one that is carried out in essence by a parliamentary committee within the legislative branch, but the work of government is important in shaping the parameters of that. As I mentioned earlier, it's the statutory provisions of the Budget Transparency and Accountability Act which set the framework and the timelines for the process. One of the key challenges that the Act provides to government is the tight timelines. British Columbia is also unique in that it has a fixed budgetary date. So in addition to the fixed dates within the consultation process in the fall, we also have a statutory requirement that government present its annual budget budget day rather, is the third Tuesday in February each year. So as a consequence, the officials in the Ministry of Finance do not have an abundance of time necessarily to sift through all of the submissions that are posted on the committee's website, to review committee transcripts to try and get a sense of where the committee is headed. By November 15th, the committee's report is in the public domain, and so the government is able to take that into account in terms of their budget building. At times, in past years, before we had the capacity to load onto the committee's website the full text of written submissions and in a real time the transcripts and supporting documents for every committee discussion, I know the ministry was quite challenged and very much wanted to have advance access to that information. The committee at the time considered that carefully, but recognizing, in fact, that its obligation was, in essence, to provide advice to the legislature, held to its deliberative model. And although all submissions would be released at the end of the committee's process in conjunction with the report, there were no advance submissions provided to the Ministry of Finance. That being said, I understand there's still an interest in refining those challenging timelines to ensure that government can, in fact, make full and even better use, perhaps, of the input and the deliberations and the work of the committee. In 2015, an interesting article examined the work of the Budget Committee in a Journal of Legislative Studies article entitled Improving the Relevance of Parliamentary Institutions, an Examination of the Legislative Pre-Budget Consultation Process in British Columbia. This is an article by University of Ottawa professor Dr. Genevieve Tellier, who concluded that this process had in fact become an important component of government's work to shape each year's provincial budget. The article noted there had been, in fact, been a culture change within the Ministry of Finance in conjunction with the work undertaken by the committee. This was echoed once by a former Minister of Finance when he appeared before the committee when asked by committee members about the impact of the committee's work and if it was true that the committee could have a real effect on the priorities of government. He said that the report of the Finance Committee every year is a very important part of ministry considerations. The staff go through it recommendation by recommendation and come back to the minister with advice on whether things are doable or not doable, what things might cost or not cost. They do that analysis and bring back all of the recommendations that the committee presented. The committee was buoyed by that because at times there has been a bit of a disconnect between the products of the work of the committee, the reports of the committee, and the budgets prepared and implemented by government. At times, in some administrations, there would actually be a summary within the budget documents released in February highlighting where there was a connection with the deliberations and recommendations put forward by the committee. In other years, it was less evident. There's often very much in parallel tandem a recognition of key themes that would emerge. Committee members often appreciate after their hours and weeks spent on the road talking to British Columbians the opportunity to see in the fullness of time within the budget documents an impact with regards to the committee's own work. So the work of the legislative committee is very much in their own hands. Once they've received the budget consultation paper, which opens up their process, they very much shape their own priorities with respect to consultations. I do have copies as well of the report from 2018, if anyone is interested in taking away a copy today. According to the deliberations of the committee, as well as the article I mentioned earlier by Dr. Tellier, it appears that the public very much appreciates the opportunity to provide input to this all-party committee. Ms. Tellier, in fact, interviewed a number of participants in the committee's process and noted that the public believes that sending feedback to members at times can even yield a more comprehensive and accurate accounting of feedback that may have been sent in private to government at one time. The multi-party committee certainly allows for diversity of views to be deliberated and discussed and reflected upon in the report. The committee members within the report writing phase are often try to resist the temptation as well to bring ideas and topics to the table which may not have been present in the deliberations with the public. They try as much as possible and strive to have the committee's report reflect as closely as they can the priorities of the public. although, of course, as elected officials, they too can deliberate and identify which themes to prioritize and how to highlight the conclusions that they collectively reach. I should also mention in British Columbia that committees' reports tend to be, although they're not always, but they tend to be unanimous reports. There is no provision in British Columbia for minority reports of a committee, so the conclusions of the committee tend to reflect those deliberations as agreed to by the committee as a whole. If there is no consensus, then the report will reflect the majority view, but the report in 2018, like many of its predecessors, was in fact a unanimously adopted report, which I think helps to sustain the understanding that, of course, a committee can be a less adversarial setting from time to time than we might see dynamics play out in a larger setting of the chamber. But there is also an appreciation, I think, around the committee table, perspectives from colleagues from different parties as well as different regions of the province, grappling with input from British Columbians and trying to assess and bring forward priorities, advice to the legislature that each member is comfortable and proud to support. So the committees have offered a forum for discussion, deliberation, and collaboration, and very much appreciated, I think, by participants in that process. Just with respect to my final slides, I'll just highlight that one of the key priorities that the new committee has set for itself this fall is to really encourage more citizen participation and to promote further engagement. We have tried to reach out this year through a variety of new communication tools to try and encourage first-time participants to the process, recognizing that many who came to the table in previous years had been perhaps participating for a number of years, perhaps their work for a particular organization who's keen to contribute, but the committee very much wanted to hear just as much from individuals in British Columbia and try to identify a number of groups, demographic groups, cultural groups at times, women, indigenous groups who have not yet found their way to the committee's process to participate. So this year we've tried to develop a series of new communications tools to highlight different aspects of the province. We're trying to work more with graphics and try and promote a lot of the work of the committee in different social media forums. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of the interaction with the public in terms of the administration and support of the committee is now supported through our online consultation portal, which allows an individual to register for a public hearing, submit a written submission, and answer the online survey questions all in one stop on their mobile device. So we're hoping it will be a process that there is some accessibility enhancements this year. We've also tried to send more communications materials out throughout the province, sharing information with local libraries, secondary school classes. The committee is holding a hearing on Indigenous within the Indigenous community in Haida Gwaii in Masset, and very much appreciated the opportunity to be welcomed into the traditional territory of the Haida Nation, and looking forward to trying to create a more diverse and robust approach to British Columbia's many diverse populations and traditions. So online engagement will be continuing, I'm sure, to be a key theme of this year's process. We also wanted to try to maximize the investment of advertising dollars in this process. We always traditionally would advertise and continue to do so in print media, but more and more find value in boosting ads on Facebook using the legislature's own social media accounts. It provides for us a way to measure through analytics on those sites exactly how many people are aware of the process, how many have actually clicked through to make a submission, and dollar to dollar provides us with a little bit more confidence that as the process moves online in terms of some of the engagement tools, that we're able to better understand how people have found out about the committee and give them more tools to participate. So with that, I'll just note that looking ahead, that the committee continues to have an interest in ensuring that it makes a real impact with respect to the shaping of the British Columbia budget. I know that although informally there are some interests around the table in things such as participatory budgeting, which is more common in a municipal budget environment. There's some very interesting innovations that are happening there locally. The committee welcomes as well the interest of the current government and the ministry. The Minister of Finance, who was before the transition of government, a longtime member serving on this committee, ways to strengthen the connection between the government's final budget as well as the work of the committee. I look forward to the discussion, and I thought I would close with this photograph of a distinguished delegation visiting British Columbia just a few months ago from the Parliament of Guyana, led, of course, by the Honourable Speaker Barton Scotland, who has joined us here today. I wanted to mention it because we actually have established a twinning relationship with the Parliament of Guyana, and we were very fortunate last fall on our budget consultation tour to have three staff from the Parliament of Guyana travel with the committee. I was unable at short notice to find a good picture of them hard at work on the road, Speaker Scotland, but I can assure you they were. And it was a real pleasure to learn from them about the work of your parliament, and look forward very much to hearing from all of you and learning today about the work in your jurisdictions on this topic. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for one more really interesting and engaging presentation. And I think the idea of how you foster participation in BC is such an interesting one, but also how you connect the process right to the executive branch side of things as well. I can imagine it mustn't be an easy feat.